welcome to the Seeds Church podcast. Be sure to follow and subscribe to us on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and on our Apple and Spotify podcasts. We hope you enjoy this inspiring message from our Sunday service.
Well, g'day. My name is Jonathan. I'm part of Team Seeds. I heard a joke the other day about a guy named Zane. And Zane woke up early on a Saturday morning in September 2058. It was an ordinary day by any means, except for Zane. This day was very special. It was the day he was going to open the last packet of toilet paper his parents bought in 2020. You know, this time has highlighted a number of things for us that are very important. We've all realised that our supply chain and those who work in it are incredibly vital to who we are. We've all been made aware of how much we're dependent on overseas manufacturing. And we wonder, will that change in the future? Many people now appreciate the need for relational connection and the simple yet beautiful thing that a touch or a handshake represents. We've just also realised how quickly our whole economic system can be put under extreme stress. And only in the blink of an eye, we were in some trouble on a national scale. And we all wonder how long it's going to take to get out of it. And I wonder if we've not seen the worst of what's to come yet. I don't know about you, but I had a quick squeeze at my superannuation account the other day, and I wish I didn't have. Wish I hadn't have. One of the big issues that many of us faces or are facing relates around our finances. And I'm not going to offer any comments on our national scale, but I think there's some things that we should do as and think about as individuals or as smaller collectives. For those of us who know me at Seeds, I know that I have spoken on finances many times. And it's important for us to grapple with them as a church and as people of faith. Do you know our finances have more to do with our faith than what most of us realise? So today, as I pick up our Thrive series, I want to focus on money. And just like you heard Rod last week, we don't want to come out of this whole COVID time having survived, but we want to do better. We want to be better. We want to thrive. And I want to encourage us to use this time to work on a new and improved version of ourselves. So when it comes to thriving in our finances, there are some surprising things that we should ruminate on, that we should think about. And I want to take you to a place today that I don't think that many of us would have considered. But first, let me lead you in prayer. Lord, speak to us in this moment. Pull apart our old mindset. Enable us to build with your help a new way of thinking, particularly around our finances. Shatter our preconceptions. Help us to see further and deeper than we've ever done before. In your name we pray. Amen. In the Old Testament, we find a book by the name of Job. And it was named after the man Job, who's introduced as a good man, a man who seems to have and who does have life and faith sorted. Job is also a wealthy man. And so in the book, we are granted access to see what is going on behind the scenes of his life. And we get to see a picture of earth, but also heaven. And in heaven, we are introduced to Satan, the master of all things evil, who one day comes before God. And he points out an apparent problem in God's moral oversight of the universe. And the problem is this: if goodness is always rewarded by God, how can anyone know if following God comes from a place of pure love, or if it's simply generated out of a desire to gain more? In other words, do you follow God because you're going to get something, or do you follow God because you love him? So God allows Satan to bring suffering into Job's life. And in the first two chapters, we see the most startling turn of events for Job. In a single day, He loses all his cattle, his sheep, his camels, all his workforce, and tragically he loses his seven sons and his three daughters. And so the rest of the book deals with this and the ramifications of this, and we find very quickly that Job does not curse God. Job does not even blame God as Satan had predicted. And then the majority of the book is taken up with Job debating with his three particular friends who have unpronounceable names, the moral law that is used to govern the universe. And I encourage you to read it all for yourself. But the short version is this, that their view of the universe, that is Job's three friends, seems to be quite rigid. And they are all convinced that Job has done something wrong to deserve this, and thus to bring the calamity into Job's life. And Job all the while insists that he's done nothing wicked, and in fact he deserves a hearing before God. At the end of the book, God reveals his power and his wisdom, and it's as seen in creation. And if you want to look at the last couple of chapters of the book of Job, it's actually startling beautiful in its portrayal of who God is. And Job realizes he has nothing to question God about, as his knowledge is significantly lacking. And Job's friends receive a rebuke from God, and I encourage you to have a look at that yourself. But in the end, Job is blessed with twice as much as what he originally started out with. The book of Job warns us against reducing God's moral law and God's way of acting in the world to an easy or even a simplistic formula, which is exactly what we want to do all the time with a whole host of things, including our finances. So today I want to explore the first two chapters of Job, and if you have a Bible handy, then I encourage you to open up to chapters 1 and 2 of Job. It's in the Old Testament, sort of towards the middle of the whole Bible. And I want to talk to you at this moment primarily about responses. And the reason responses are important is because we have very little control over what goes on around us. We don't control our financial markets, but we are in full control of how we react or how we respond. So if you don't want to be challenged today, if you don't want to own your own part in this, then I suggest that you go and make a cup of coffee, or you walk away and go outside or do something else, and don't listen to the rest that I'm going to say. But if you do, here it is. Job has had a very rough time. So he lost all his livestock, and you can read into that he's lost all his income. He's lost all his children. Read into that he's lost all his future. And he's stricken with sores all over his body. Read into that he's lost his health. You know, if you think about that, and I'll just stop there at the moment. When it comes to the scriptures, that is the Bible, we do not need to go very far to find the exact same circumstances that we are facing at this very moment. Think about Job. He lost his income, he lost his future, he lost his health. In chapter 1, we find Job losing not only all his livestock, but his children. And I want to read to you from chapter 1 and verse 20, which says this. At this, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship and said, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I will depart. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. May the name of the Lord be praised." In all this, Job did not sin by charging God with wrongdoing. Now, there's lots to unpack in these couple of verses, but I want you to hear verse 20. And so I'm going to reinforce it by reading it to you again. At this, Job got up and tore his robe and shaved his head. Then he fell to the ground in worship. Do you notice in that verse, there were two things that Job did. The first was he gave expression to his grief. You know, sometimes, you know, I read that and sometimes I think we need to have it. We think we need to have it all together. We think we need to be brave to hold it all in. But that certainly is not what's being modeled here. Job actually tore his clothes and shaved all the hair off his head. Both culturally appropriate things, responses for you to do when grief has overtaken you and overwhelmed you, but also both very public things. When you shave your head, it takes a while for it to grow back, and everybody can see it. What this is telling me is that we should give voice, we should give actions to our grief, even our financial grief. Bottling it up is not helpful, but sharing it with others that you trust is. The second thing that Job did here was to worship. It actually says at the end of verse 20 that he fell to the ground in worship. Now, worship is many things and it's practiced in many different ways. Yet the essence of worship is that we acknowledge who God is and that God is in charge. And I wonder today, sitting in your lounge room, what you can say in respect to your finances. I wonder if you can worship God in respect to your finances. I wonder if you can say, God is in charge of my finances. Can you worship God even despite or even with a loss in your finances? I know there are many around our country who have now have to deal with a reduced income. And I've seen it personally firsthand. All of us are feeling the pressure that's all around us as a nation. So here is someone before us, Job, who has lost his entire income. All his revenue streams are gone. Indeed, it probably took him a lifetime to amass them in the first place. And what does he do and how does he react? Grief, absolutely. And also acknowledgement of the world around him. Acknowledgement that God is still in charge. Now, maybe today you're not someone who knows God personally. Maybe you're not someone who's had an experience with Jesus. And you're listening to this and you're thinking, what is this bloke on about? But let me ask you a question. Are you really in charge of your finances? Are you really the master of your own destiny? Can you for sure say that you will save up and have a certain amount of reserves in your bank by the end of this year? No one can. These last few months have proven that yet again. But here is the difference with people of faith. People of faith who trust in God are not immune from this happening. It happens to all of us. Yet they know the one who is in ultimate control of all things. Job knew that God was in charge of all. And in the end, his faith was justified. What do you have faith in? In the end, will that be justified for you? Thriving in our finances means knowing who's ultimately in control. It's not about what you have. It's about who you know. So Job has lost all his income, lost all his livestock, lost all his children, lost his future. And as I hinted before, he's also afflicted with something like these terrible sores all over his body. Let me take you to chapter 2 and verses 7 onwards. So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord and afflicted Job with painful sores from the soles of his feet to the crown of his head. Then Job took a piece of broken pottery and scraped himself with it as he sat amongst the ashes. And his wife said to him, "Are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die."
Sounds pretty painful. No antibiotics, no bandages, no cream, no anesthetics. So what does he do? He gets a bit of broken pottery and scrapes his sores with it. And not even any sympathy from his wife. Notice what she says. She says, curse God and die. And what's his response? Verse 10, we read this. He replied, you are talking like a foolish woman. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? I find his answer profoundly deep and worthy of just a lot of thinking. Shall we accept good from God and not trouble? It's a big question. A while ago, I twigged to the fact that we blame God for all the bad stuff, but we never blame God for all the good stuff. We often say, God, why did you let me lose my job? And we never say, God, why did you let me find a job? Sometimes we say, God, you let so-and-so die so young, but you never say, God, why did you let so-and-so live a long life? Job's answer confronts me because it pulls apart my subjective view of what God should do. That is, what is right for my world and what is right in terms of my definition of what is good. Time and time again, I've thought something to be a curse when it turned out in the end to be a blessing. And I've made the mistake of assuming I know it all. In fact, I've assumed that I know it all better than God does. I wonder if that's you as well. Job questions our assumptions about our knowledge and the whole picture and about us being the final judge over everything. Now, I know only too well and full well that there are implications to what I'm saying, and I know that some today will be ridiculing my thoughts and my process here, but I'm just raising with you what I find written in the scriptures. Job was a man who lost his income, his family, his health, yet he still didn't presume to pass judgment on God's actions. I wonder if thriving in our finances is not actually about us having more. It's not about us being more comfortable, nor even about us being more financially secure. I wonder if thriving in our finances is acknowledging that it all comes from God and that we do not understand the whole. I wonder if thriving is not being bound to the slave of finances, but harnessing ourselves to the Creator and the Sustainer of all things. That's where Job went when his world came crashing down. My friends, if your finances are under strain, where do you find yourself going? What is your stable in all this? Who is your anchor when the seas get rough, as they surely are at this moment? God's promises to us are secure. It might be that your world will not be as you imagined it. It might be that you do not have the lifestyle you'd like to be accustomed to. Yet faith in God will never be disappointed. God will never let you go, but you have to let go of the things that you are holding on in order to grip onto God. Let me take you then to the last verse of chapter 2. So Job's had all these things happen to him, and in that moment, three of his friends came and sat down with him. In verse 12, it says this: when they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him, and they began to weep aloud. So they tore their robes and they sprinkled dust on their heads. So much grief had overtaken Job that his friends coming to see him could hardly recognize him. And when they saw him, they actually were consumed by their own grief as well. But then listen to verse 13. It's incredible. Listen to what these friends did. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and 7 nights. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. Imagine that. Imagine sitting with your friend for 7 days and not saying a thing. This is a practice found in Jewish culture even today. It's called sitting Shiva, where for a period of 7 days, the family members of the deceased gather in one location, typically their own home or the home of the deceased, and they mourn the loss in a variety of ways, sitting and being silent. My friends, there's a lesson to be learned here. There is a time to think and a time to be quiet. There is a time to ask that deep, penetrating question, which is this: in the face of all that I'm experiencing, what is my life all about? I think that the silence in our world at this moment is a good thing. Our streets are silent. Our skies are silent. There's even a silence amongst us. This is the perfect, the best time to ask, what is my life all about? And at this moment, the consumerism that we worshipped and adored for so many generations is silent at this time. We cannot buy our way out of this. The God of consumerism has gone quiet. It has nothing to say to us at this moment. But let me assure you, God does. And our question is, are we listening? Are we listening to how much we were entrapped to our finances? Do we really need all that stuff that was so important just in February? Do we really need to earn that much? Does thriving in our finances mean that we need to keep less and give away more? Does thriving in our finances mean that we have to put to death the God of consumerism and greed that has been active for far too long in our world? I think it does. In a little while, our world will start back up again. Of course, it will never be the same. But let me tell you, there will be pressure for certain things to be lifted back up into prominence again. Our need for more will be promoted with all vigor. Do you need to go back into that old practice of consumerism? I don't think you do. When everything is stripped away, in the end, as we learned from the book of Job and the experience of this man Job who lost everything, when everything is stripped away, it's God and the promises and the faithfulness of God that remain.
Well, thanks for listening to the Seeds Church podcast. We hope you join in with us next week. For more information, you can visit our website at seedschurch.org.